Welcome to this week's edition of Cow Daily. I don't know why I've come in with this voice, but my voice started at the top when I breathed in before you start, so I thought I'd just run with it, yeah? Alice, how are you doing?
Greetings from Teesside, or Tyneside as it's known, if you're not the chinless buffoon that is our Prime Minister. Yes.
Yes. Less said about him, the better, but at the back of the show, we will be talking about him a little bit. 2 seconds, I'm just going to turn you up a little bit. Just bear with us.
Am I quiet?
No, you're all right. I just think I had it turned down because I was working on something the other day and it wasn't at live sound. So anyway, before we go into it, first thing I want to say is, get in! League champions, Gateshead. League champions.
Yes, I did see this. Well done. Well done. Well done.
Come fans. On the heat. Get up. Champions. I mean, I'm not going to get into it too much because I want to like do something with some gated people. The reason being, it's not just a footballing achievement, it's an achievement for the area. I'll not get into the detail, as I said, but the previous owners were horrific. And it's now a fan-owned club, and it was 72 hours away from going out of business 3 years ago because of the nefarious nature of unfettered capitalism previously and the alleged fraud that was going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Alleged. But here we are now, league champions, and we were relegated because of the bad business practices of the previous people. So now, after 3 years and having no players and everything of that nature, we are now champions and go back to the National League, one below the Football League, up the effing heed. I'm trying really hard.
Yeah, that didn't work. Well done, fan-owned club. That is absolutely mint news. Made up for you.
Come on. Right, buzzing. Right, back to the bad things in life, like politics and people.
Yeah. Why can right. We do this again?
Yeah, firstly, we started a little bit early this week. Apologies for that, but we're both still a little bit not 100%, and we wanted to get this done today, and we can go and have some food afterwards as we can make ourselves better. And my back's not too bad. It's close to being fixed. Yourself? How's yourself after last week's? What was it?
I think I'm on the mend now. I'm feeling a lot better and everything. I think it just takes a while, I think, to kind of get your energy levels back up and everything. But I'm quite pleased with how it's going compared to other kind of horror stories I've heard from other people. So canny.
Good for you. I'm pleased to hear it. Buzzing that you're looking well as well, which is nice. Know what I mean? So anyway, on this week's show, ladies and gentlemen, we have Tim Westwood and women's safety within the, what would we call it, the nighttime economy? Just basically like leave women alone, yeah? So we're going to be talking about local elections at the back end of the show. A few people were keen to know what we're doing. So tune in later and find out what we're doing. Yeah. And the last thing we're going to talk about, Roe versus Wade, which is abortion rights in the United States. There's some pretty troubling stuff going on over there. So stay tuned for a fun-packed show about really dark things, which we'll try and lighten up for you all. But first, Westwood. Now, some of you might not know who this idiot is. So I add him to the stream. It's that idiot there. This is from allhiphop.com. Tim Westwood leaves his Capital Extra radio show amid sexual misconduct allegations. Following the claims that have recently come to light, Tim Westwood has stepped down from his show until further notice, Global said in a statement. Global's the parent company of the radio station he works for. The DJ faces allegations of predatory sexual behavior and groping. 7 black women who've chosen to remain anonymous detailed his misconduct in a joint investigation conducted by the BBC and The Guardian. 3 of the women recounted their experiences with the DJ's predatory sexual behavior. 4 others described his unwanted touching at events. All of the alleged victims were in their late teens or early 20s when the incidents occurred. The alleged incidents date back to 1992. The most recent happened in 2017. Tim Westwood denied the allegations against him. His spokesperson said the women's claims are false. In a career that has spanned 40 years, there have never been any complaints made against him officially or unofficially, the spokesperson declared. Tim Westwood strongly rejects all allegations of wrongdoing. Thoughts, etc., Wolf?
Well, my first one is that one about certainly the, you know, he might not have had any official allegations made mm-hmm. about him during that time. He has definitely had unofficial ones made about him during that. I've been hearing stories about Tim Westwood by people who've encountered him in the industry for about 20 years, and they are all around the same kind of things that are starting to come out now. In terms of how he behaves in public anyway, I've not heard anything about how he's, you know, how he's behaved with women behind closed doors. But yeah, certainly there have been massive, massive concerns. It was, and you know, I was going to say an open secret, but it wasn't even a secret. It's just, you know, it's that, you know, that he is really, really dodgy, particularly around, you know, particularly around young women, but particularly around young Black women as well. I mean, I think partly that a lot of it's been dismissed because I think Tim Westwood, he was just kind of like a living meme as well. You know, he's sort of a joke, like the way, you know, the way he goes on. You know, for anybody who doesn't know who he is, who's like listened to him on the radio, you know, he's done like hip hop DJ, but he kind of talks in, shall we say, a very particular way, I think. And it's odd to me, Tim Westwood is just always, you know, people say like he tries to emulate Black culture, but I think he caricatures it. You know, it's almost like he's turned it into a joke, and you know, to the point where Sacha Baron Cohen has openly said that the character Ali G is based on Tim Westwood. You know, and you can see exactly why. In fact, Tim Westwood is even more ridiculous than Ali G is when you see Ali G in sketches. So, yeah, I've been. This story is one of the ones where, because I've been keeping out of comments sections recently, and it was.
Have you? I can't think why. Why would you be doing that?
It was doing my mental health a world of good, and then I started reading like kind of what people I knew were saying about this, and looking at comment sections, and some of it just made my heart sink all over again. And you know, it's, you know, obviously people are saying that, you know, no complaints, you know, at this time have been made to the police about this. So, you know, it's the whole thing. Oh, women can just go around making all of these allegations. If that had really happened, why haven't they gone to the police? We could do an entire, you know, I could do an entire show talking by myself about why people don't go to the police.
Yeah.
That was
maybe we should one day, to be fair.
Yeah, that was a field I worked in for, you know, I used to work in for a really long time. And you know, there's lots of reasons why people don't, and even when they do, things don't necessarily happen. So it's kind of looking, well, why have they gone to the BBC? A lot of the time it's to warn others. They don't feel that they've got any other way of being able to do anything else. And to
why do women feel like that though? Like, do a little bit on that. Why?
The statistics of these things being reported to the police, even getting to court, is shockingly low, and when they do, conviction rates are really low as well. When they get there, I can't remember what they currently are off the top of my head.
4%, I believe. It's in the low percentage.
I was going to say 5, so yeah, around about the same thing. The process for the court, it can, is very, very long, is very re-traumatizing. If you've ever heard anybody be interrogated by the defence, which I have in Crown Court, you will understand exactly why people don't go through, because it is horrific the way defence lawyers are allowed to speak to people. You know, there were some changes made. You know, there was times when, you know, perpetrators were allowed to represent themselves and interrogate their own, you know, kind of cross-examine their own victim on the stand.
When was that stopped?
It's been since when I've been working in this field.
A long time.
It's been within the last 20 years.
Wow.
That's done. You know, kind of we've heard of women having to hold up their underwear in court. You know, that was worn on the time, you know, at the time of the assaults. That was a really long time ago, not something that is I've heard of being practiced in recent years. But all of this, it you know, it does count. Even just the low conviction rate, the, you know, the horror of trying to give a statement, mm-hmm, of what happened. And that's even with a, you know, an officer who actually might be really sympathetic and might be, you know, really supportive of you. Making a statement is still really, really hard. You know, people don't do that. A lot of the women in this case, with the Tim Westwood case, you know, it's, you know, they were very young at the mm-hmm time. As well, I think one was, you know, one at least was 17 years old.
Yeah, she was 17, yeah.
You know, we've got young women who were from a very strict religious backgrounds who were kind of sneaking out to try and make a name for themselves in the music industry. You know, it's that feeling of, oh, I'll get into trouble. I did something wrong. I shouldn't mm-hmm have gone there by myself. It was my fault. You know, some of them blaming themselves for not saying no at the time, not vocalizing the word no. And this is a criticism that I've seen in comment sections and from people I know as well, saying, oh, well, he didn't say no, you know, they didn't say no. Mm-hmm. So, you know, was he just hitting on them? They had every opportunity to say that they didn't want to do that. And it takes a strong stomach to do so, but if you actually read their accounts of that, they are very, very typical trauma responses. It's that feeling of being frozen, mm-hmm, when, without kind of going into the whole brain science of it, but when we're faced with threats, our amygdala kicks in, and that, you know, the amygdala is a part of the brain that then creates a whole series of chain reactions, mm-hmm, in the body, which might determine how somebody reacts. So, you know, your cortisol levels go up, your adrenaline goes up.
That's cortisol is the stress chemical. It's like, yeah.
So that's when you're looking at your like fight and flight thing, you know, and so, you know, somebody might try to fight, somebody might try to run away, somebody might try to friend or, you know, befriend somebody, or they might just freeze. Now, when the freeze response is when you're looking at something called the dorsal vagus nerve, okay, slow, it is basically taking the wheel, and that slows everything down. Mm-hmm. So that can slow your heart rate down, slow your respiratory system down, and can literally render you unable to speak. It's all about mm-hmm keeping you still, and everything like that. Sometimes people think that they have spoken. There's lots of accounts of where people have said, oh, I screamed, and then there'll be mm-hmm passers-by saying, no, they didn't make a sound. But that person honestly believed that they did. But,
like, is that what a silent scream is? Like, people are so terrorized that they like think they've screamed like a silent.
They genuinely think that they have, and they've just not been able to. And when I was reading these accounts, and maybe that's just from me working in that field for a while, I was just like, well, that's, you know, that's why they didn't. But, you know, we do know that perpetrators do pick their victims very carefully. You know, it's going to be the ones who are least likely to protest, hence why, you know, kind of you see like young women, you know, kind of particularly or young people from marginalized backgrounds as well. I mean, you know, I think some had said, you know, their previous experiences of racial discrimination from police officers had also stopped them from reporting as well. So
it's on top of that, and that's on top of like how women feel.
Absolutely.
Excuse me.
You know, I can't speak for any one person as to what their decision was, but there is a whole host of reasons as to why people might not. Often more than one reason why people don't want to go through that.
Yeah, and I mean, race is another aggravating factor there, like as to why people won't go to the police. And it kind of links in with the wider sort of things mm-hmm people are talking about in the protest movement, like through Black Lives Matter and other organisations.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So as far as I know at this point, the police haven't, you know, I'm not sure any formal complaint to the police has been made about Tim Westwood. Sometimes with things like this, you find that that does happen because other people who might have also been a victim might read an account, you know, when somebody's come forward. You know, it's very, you know, we always say false accusations are extremely rare. And certainly you're not going to get a whole bunch of people coming forward about the same person and for it all to be bollocks. As I say, people who've seen it, the way, to, you know, how this is going to go, I don't know what exactly it is he's done. I only know about what I've seen, you know, from the documentary that was made about him. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we then see more come out from this.
I wouldn't be surprised either. I mean, as I said, it's not been a secret. It's been this open thing for years that Westwood is noncy.
There's been lots of curious language used in the media about it and saying things like, it's been described as unwanted sex, inflicting unwanted sex onto
fucking
the
victim. Waffle.
Well, there was one, I think it was on Mixmag, actually. I was about to, like, launch into this massive rant, you know, about, like, there's another name for that. And then I saw a comment which more or less said exactly that, saying unwanted sex, don't you call that rape? Isn't this really dodgy? Why are we wording things in this way? And I looked at who wrote it, and it was Mr. C from The Shaman. Who had written this and kind of challenged.
Previous guest of the Milk the Cow podcast.
About, you know, who had kind of, and I've seen him kind of comment similar things on this before. He's talked about, you know, things in the industry like that. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't entirely surprised to see that it was him who had said that. But good, you know, good for him. It's, I know people often get annoyed by the whole, the alleged allegation. And, you know, that is, you know, just to explain, that is purely illegal. Thing. If somebody hasn't been convicted in a court, then the newspapers have to say alleged. We've done that on this show before, and it's just, you know, it's not casting doubt, you know, on the victims or anything like that. It's unfortunately purely a legal thing when you see that happen. Yeah, just in case anybody was wondering about it.
Well, that's very illuminating. I mean, it's got us thinking about a lot of things, but I was thinking about this today when we're putting it together and some of the things you've told us in the past as well. And it's around, like, why do people not, especially when they're, like, related to or friends with, why will they not believe that their friend, family member or whatever is capable of doing such heinous acts? Right. And one of the examples that I've pulled up is, have you heard of Larry Nassar? He was connected to the gymnastics team in the United States. Now, they reckon he's got upwards of 500 people who he has abused.
Wow.
From what I was reading is, even family members of survivors have said that they couldn't believe it, and it took them a while to square their version of Larry with what Larry had done.
Yeah.
And then to their family member or friend or whatever it happened to be. Like, people were saying, like, oh, we really, really love Larry. And for a lot of people, that's a mind breaker, you know? So denial tends to come from that. What I've wrote down here is, it's hard for outsiders to reconcile the happy feelings they have about friends and family or public figures with their heinous actions. It does something psychologically to people. So that links into something you've talked to us about and introduced us to, which was, like, the just world theory.
Yeah.
So it's people wish the world was safe. So that then leads to victim blaming, because people and that denialism within the head, they don't want to think that the person who went for a walk after dark could be them. So it must immediately be, oh, well, they shouldn't have went out after dark, rather than what heinous people were doing out looking for women. So that's particularly exacerbated if you're close friends or a family member with the perpetrators.
Because what you've got to realise as well is that abusive people, they'll, you know, they don't just groom their victims, they groom the people around them as well. And they're very, very good at it a lot of the time, you know, so I get it. It, you know, it is hard to kind of reconcile when you've, you know, when you're kind of hearing this about somebody you really like or you might even love. You know, it might be a really close family member, or and you just think, well, I don't understand how this has happened. They might present themselves as having a very particular, you know, a very particular worldview as well. You know, I've met people like this before who, to me, you know, showed a very different face of themselves to the one that they presented, and it's terrifying because you just think nobody will believe you. Nobody will believe you. At all. Yeah. And sometimes you're right, unfortunately, as well. It's one of those. If they're particularly manipulative, it's hard. It is. I'm not understanding of it. But we do need to look at how can we not do that? How can we best support people, really, when these things kind of come to light, I think. And when people, I'm not even going to get into the whole Johnny Depp Amber thing. What I will say is that I don't like to comment publicly on cases like that. Even the Tim Westwood one, you know, even though we kind of decided to run with it and it was my idea, kind of don't really like to like focus on the details of the case, because when you've got people commenting on it, it's, you know, those famous people, they're never going to read your comment and they don't give a shit about what you think has happened. But other people who might have been a victim of a similar crime might be reading that. And when you're seeing these horrific things like written about the accused or written about the victim, people will be looking at that going, well, that was a similar situation to what I'm in. And if that's what people think, there's no way I'm going to report it. And that's why I tend to kind of back away from keeping my mouth shut in public about cases like this.
Same. I mean, I'm not gonna you know, me, I'll always speak up if I can. And I think it's important for men to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying women's voices aren't equally as important, but in a different way, I think it's important for men to actually like stand strong against this shit. Mm-hmm. Particularly when it's like involving people that they might know, because after a time, like survivors tend to get squeezed out. I've noticed if it's not taken to the law, which I don't blame anybody for not doing that at all. Just to be clear, given what you've illustrated earlier on in this piece, given that those circumstances, like, people tend to just like they don't want to rock the boat, so they'll especially when it comes to a friend or a family member. You see this so many times. People have been abused when they were kids, and family members go with the nice uncle who was the abuser. Like people know through being out and about, or scenes, as we've seen with like DJs in Westwood in this particular example, and others. It can happen on any level because people want to be seen to be hanging out with the so-called cool kids, or what they can do with them. And they might put themselves in around those people, not understanding what those people are actually about. This is hard for us to talk about, but I'm going to plow on. Also, there was like stuff I was reading about today. Like this feeds the denialism, and it's around the wrong kind of victim. And it's part of that whole just world theory. So what that means is there tends to be like sort of five different sort of subcategories of that. So that's the right kind of victim has to be seen as a weak or a vulnerable person. Somebody has to be involved in a respectable activity at the time of the assault. It doesn't go on to say what a respectable activity is, by the way. Blameless in all aspects of the interaction. Victimized by an obvious offender, and by somebody who does not know the offender. So that's supposed to be like the perfect survivor, like to be believed. But even then, people will still not be believed because people do not want to believe. Sometimes when there's an overwhelming amount of evidence or there's multiple people who've said that that's happened to them by the same person, is a combination in my brain of like, I cannot get my head around it, but it also boils me piss. So I'm trying to work through my emotions while I'm doing this bit, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like basically all of the stuff that, I've said there, it tends to lead to self-blame. So it's this like weight of opinion, like prove it towards a traumatized person, by the way, who like may not fit these apparent like perfect characteristics for a survivor. And then straight away,
because they don't fit those characteristics, they might believe that themselves, so they might not view what happened to them as a crime in the first place as well. And you see that happen a lot too.
Yes, absolutely. So to tie this whole section together, now we were like, Westwood wasn't sacked, he's stepped down. We've obviously seen the like spokesperson's bit. God knows who that was, possibly Westwood's newly appointed PR person. And then is that just to be left at that then? Like, but at the same time, you know you're going to get people coming with the whole like, well, nothing's proven and the poor lad's lost his job.
Yeah.
Where does that sit with you? Like, how does like those two things? How would you counter that if somebody said that? What would you say?
Well, as you say,
I know.
He wasn't sacked. He wasn't sacked. So, and what you tend to find is they go, "Oh yeah, they've been cancelled." And actually, you look further down the line, and they haven't at all. They're still looking in, you know, working in the industry and stuff. I believe Marilyn Manson just won a Grammy. Quite recently. That's like, really? You know, they haven't all been cancelled. They very rarely are. Some of them get actively richer from being cancelled, because all of a sudden they're in the public eye. But it's about, you know, about believing the people around you, about kind of us getting better at intervening when we see shady stuff, particularly when we're out and about in public. You know, at gigs, a lot of us are starting to go back to music gigs as well. You're more likely to kind of see something happening in the crowd than you are like with whoever is the DJ on stage or whoever is in the band. When you're at festivals as well, believe me, if you go to a festival, you see plenty of Westwoods walking around with a young lass who looks about like 15 years old. And it's, you know, you see it everywhere. Particularly I think when I'm in, you know, I've actually been really, really like, well, I say lucky, but it should be normal, unfortunately. I've encountered very, very little problems when I've been in a crowd in terms of like dodgy behaviour. Loads of my friends have had some terrible experiences with being groped, and that has happened to me when I was very young. But yeah, I've heard some like horrendous things, but to me, like, you know, I'm the type of lass who will throw herself in like a punk mosh pit and jump around and get flung about, and I love it. I love it, and I have a really good time. And generally, the people in there are really good crack. You know, somebody falls down, you pick each other back up. That's just how it works. When I went to see, who was it? I was at a Sham 69 gig, and I ended up like, I actually didn't mean to go in, but ended up right in the pit, and it was really, really leery. And they were like hoying each other around, and this guy, he was about 6'5", like turned around to like shove me, looked at me and went, "Enoch, can't, me mum would kill us if I hit a lass." And we had like, you know, we had a good, I was like, it's fine. It's kind of, you know, how I ended up here in the first place. I wouldn't have been that close to it if I didn't expect to get thrown around. It's just what happens, and it's always a good laugh. I've always found a real camaraderie with that, and I'd hate to lose that, because, you know, you were frightened of some bellend who's behaved really horribly to you. But I have seen some things as well. I did actually punch somebody at a gig once for groping the lead singer, who was female. And then many, many moons ago. And then my friend punched him as well. You know, he didn't have it. That guy didn't have a very good night. And I think some other people from the crowd got involved as well, who we didn't know. And that's what it is. It's about looking out for each other. You see somebody behaving like that, and you do something about it. You know, make sure that these people do not feel emboldened just because we're all in really tight, closed spaces, that it's all right to do something like that. Since everything's reopened after, you know, the pandemic and everything like that, and people are going back to gigs, I have heard a lot more stories about stuff like that happening, and it's really, really disheartening, actually. I don't know if it's just that with being in for so long, people are going raj, but then I think, well, no, that doesn't turn you into a, you know, into a sex offender just because we haven't been going to gigs like this. There literally isn't any excuse for it whatsoever. But there are organisations, you can check them out online, Safe Gigs for Women. They do like a lot of work around this kind of stuff, and, you know, you can get involved, or, you know, just kind of have them a presence in your venues and stuff, and things like that.
Well, like, you know, I know you don't speak for all women, but if you did, what would you want men to do? Like, who aren't the perpetrators?
As I say, just, you know, kind of support the people around you. You know, look out for, you know, when you're in gigs, like, look out for, you know, look out for people perpetrate. From what I find, like, perpetrators, if they think they're going to be challenged by a bloke, well, they don't like to be challenged by anyone. Really, that's, they try to get in circumstances where that doesn't happen. But they're definitely more worried about being challenged by men than they are. Mm-hmm. By women. You know, I've known women who've picked because, you know, somebody will see that they're in a relationship with a guy, and all of a sudden the pictures stop because they respect a fictional man more than they do the women that they're sending this shit to. It's wild. It really is. So yeah, it's, you know, it's about kind of, if you see something like this, you know, kind of speaking out about it. You know, I've said this before, as I say, it's not all down, you know, it's not all down to women to do that. It's not all down to men to do it. And just kind of, if you have somebody confide in you, what, you know, about something like this, you know, give them the choices. You know, it's about us all being informed, and it's, you know, it's not up to any of us to decide what someone does. Some, you know, some people might decide to officially report it, and that's great. I've seen people get great results from doing that, or even when they haven't got a great result from doing that, I've still felt empowered because they've said, even though it didn't go anywhere, that person knows that I will speak about this now. And, you know, they've kind of taken that attitude, which is really nice to see. You know, so if people want to do that, that's great. And they should have all the support to do it, and let them know that that's an option. But also that, you know, you're not going to not believe them if they decide, actually, no, I can't at this point. And that's fine. It's about giving that power back to somebody who's had it taken away from them.
Good for you. That's a really good place to end this particular section. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much indeed for your knowledge. And it was good to shut up and listen and understand how it is for women. I mean, obviously, we've had these conversations before, but I'm not sure if we've had a conversation on a podcast about it for quite a while. So it's been very valuable.
And I think as well, you know, things like gigs as well, it's having that, you know, they can be really lovely spaces, you know, for women. And like, and I know this because I've been in them plenty of times, and I, you know, particularly love the put, you know, not to say that there aren't dodge pots on the punk scene, you do get the old bomb, but I've always felt like really supported by that community, and going to see bands as well. And so when they are good spaces, they're absolutely magic, like they are, and that's what we should be striving for.
Needed spaces, aren't they? They need to definitely be like positive spaces for all at all times.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice one, dude. Thanks for that. Right. Just on this one, become a patron, gain instant access to Milk the Cow's private chat forum, patreon.com/cowdaily. You heard? I've just got how to do this, you heard thing. There's this whole meme flying around where this guy goes up to people in New York and don't ever disrespect me, and then says what they look like, and then goes, you heard, at the end. It makes no sense until you've seen it. I'll send you it later. But I'm just absolutely like, you heard, at the end of everything I'm saying at the minute. Anyway, local elections. So, wow. Local elections this Thursday, based on the average of the polls, Labour, currently has the strongest public support, with 42% saying they would vote for this party in a national election. That necessarily doesn't break down to the locals, but that's what we've got. The Conservatives boosted their position in the polls following the invasion of Ukraine, but the Partygate scandal has seen them drop to 34%. Just bear with us. Liberal Democrats have benefited from the scandal, now reaching 11% of the vote. Wow, princely. In Scotland, around 39% of adults are favouring the Scottish National Party, followed by Labour at 17%, and the Conservatives at 10%. Surprised they even got that in Scotland, according to you.
I am as well.
The Tories have the highest proportion of councillors across the country, a position they are unlikely to lose. Most English councils are electing just a third or half of their councillors, meaning major overhauls will be difficult. Here's some of the factors, according to Ipsos, which could decide people's votes. So 67%, the cost of living. Mm-hmm. Note, Labour have been saying things that they can't actually change in the locals, but that's another thing.
Yeah.
The UK government's policies for dealing with asylum seekers, that's 47%. We'll come back to that. Mm. Climate change, also 47%. The COVID-19 pandemic, 43%. Yeah. The UK government's proposals for reducing regional inequalities, also known as levelling up, 42%. The war in Ukraine, 38%. And lastly, stories about Downing Street parties that broke COVID regulations and Boris Johnson being fired, 37%. What do you think of that?
Well, I think the Greens are going to do well in these local elections.
Yeah. Tell me why. Why do you think so?
That is my prediction. I think, I don't know, maybe it's just like me in the Northeast. I do seem to see some growing support for them, like South Tyneside. You know, they never used to have any councillors. I think
now
they've got three. I think they've got three Green councillors at the moment. I know in North Tyneside, I think it's very close in terms of the support that they got at the last ones. I'd be more interested, not necessarily how people vote, but whether people vote, I think, in this one, because I think I keep seeing the phrase, I don't particularly like it, but I keep seeing the phrase politically homeless at the moment from people in things where it's talking about elections or, you know, or political parties in general. So I'd be interested to see what, you know, because I think as well that it tends to be a bit rubbish, the turnout at local elections as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was even lower down there. Mm-hmm. Have you decided who you're voting for?
Nobody.
No.
I'm going back to that. I mean, it's back to the three usual suspects in our ward. Mm-hmm. Lib Dems, Labour, Conservatives, in case anybody didn't realise. And I don't agree with or believe in anything they've got to say or anything that they've got to stand for. I don't believe them. They're a bunch of lying bastards. I hope all of those parties burn in a skip fire very, very soon. Now, if there was a good local independent, I would possibly vote for them. Possibly the Greens at a push, but I really, on a national level, didn't like the way Corbyn they could have played a part in making Corbyn the head of a government of national unity and got rid of Johnson. They didn't do it. I think Caroline Lucas I can't remember exactly what she said since, but she's kind of acknowledged it. But they were like fully doing the whole like rah-rah Europe thing. And it smells to me like they were doing that because they gain quite a bit of money because they do well in the European elections. Also, you know, that the policy platform is very much Remain and all of that as well. Fine, they're doing that, but like we all know, like Brexit was used as a as a political football, particularly like in the 2017-2019 elections. And basically, I don't see any of these electoral possibilities as having. My baseline is this, and I've said this many times. What does this do for the millions of people living in poverty and the millions more being dragged into it?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Not going to do a thing. As I said, Labour are putting out election propaganda. twofold. One is trying to allude that anything within the local elections can affect national policy, and it can't. So they're giving it the whole, like, Labour will help you with this and help you with that to do with the cost of living crisis. You know, you ain't doing shit. Mm-hmm. You aren't, like, and even if you did get in on a national level, it doesn't meet people's needs. The second thing that they're doing is like this kind of Blairite revisionism. Tony Blair polls as one of the most hated people in Britain. Mm-hmm. But on the Labour right, they seem completely deluded to this fact. Completely. So they're positioning him and like trying to elude that Starmer's kind of like within that same milieu. Whereas Starmer got elected on Corbyn continuity and party unity. So mm-hmm. that's why a lot of people like stuck around and, oh, well, I'm going to give him a chance. Whereas at the time, others were saying, don't trust him. You can't trust him. Here's a reason why you can't trust him. But people mm-hmm. were so tired and fatigued at the time. I understand completely why they rounded on and attacked me rather than dealt with the fact. Don't like it, but fuck you. Yeah. But he, look, I take no pleasure in being right on this at all.
No. At all. No. And I think the reason the Greens are going to do well, I think particularly when people felt disillusioned between the two main parties, Labour and Conservative, was, you know, they would vote for Lib Dem often as like a third option. But I think because of the coalition and everything that happened there, Lib Dems are still right out of favour. And I think we are starting to see kind of Greens sort of come through. And I did reading The Independent, which was talking about, you know, kind of a rise in Green voters, you know, in the northeast, and they were talking about South Tyneside actually. So like me eyes kind of like pricked on it. And they were asking different people, and that it's been quoted, one guy they spoke to, Paul Ahmed, who is a retired firefighter, had been a lifelong Labour voter, which, you know, obviously kind of very typical in that area, had said that he was going to be voting Green after he'd always been a lifer, you know. So they said, you know, they said why, and they said, you know, they, meaning Labour, are the only party you'll see around here. You know, Labour's taken this town for granted, and I'd sooner kill myself than vote Tory. It's a bold way of putting it, Paul, but I think there's a lot of people who've kind of done that. My issue with all of them is that I've seen very little into what different candidates from across the board are actually proposing. The nearest I've got, and I was going to say this tonight anyway, is vote for us because we're not Tories. And that is literally kind of like the only, you know, they haven't said what they were doing. I was going to talk about this anyway tonight on the live stream. And then when I got home, my partner mentioned that somebody, some canvassers had knocked on the door and had asked for me personally, not for him, who is also on the electoral register, but had asked for me, and I wasn't in at the time. And they said, you know, they were from the Green Party. Now, he voted for them the last time in the local elections, which might be why they weren't interested in talking to him, because they might see him as a sure bet anyway. I have sometimes voted Labour in previous ones. At the last local elections, I spoiled my ballot because I was that hacked off with a lot of them for not saying anything other than we're not Tories. And I said, oh, what did they say? When he said, you know, he went, oh, I told them I voted Green. And I said, all right, what did they say? Like, why did they, you know, what are they proposing for the area? And he said, oh, they said, oh, well, it's really important to vote this time because we're only behind them by a couple of hundred votes. Is that right? So their strategy was vote for us because, you know, we've got a good chance of beating the Conservatives. You know, vote for us because we're not Tories. Now, I'm not just singling the Greens out for this. Everybody who isn't, you know, every candidate who isn't the Conservative Party is doing this at the minute. It's like, you need to vote for us to get them out. Well, that's not good enough. You need to say what you're going to do. You know, you need to say why, you know, why you are good for this area. You know, you need to show that you know, you're bothered about the same local issues, but like none of them seem to be doing that. That might vary obviously in different areas. People, you know, other people might know their candidates a bit better, but I see very, very little. And I think, well, why should people vote for you?
I would, like, I mean, we both know this. I'm preaching to the choir with you, but like, system change, anybody? Mm. We don't actually need to rearrange more deck chairs on the Titanic. We need system change, and that's not going to come. So, well, it's certainly not going to come anytime soon through the ballot box. I know that. Mm. So where does that then leave us to gain system change? In breach of social media's community guidelines, if we were to talk about it?
Well, you know, to quote Ursula Le Guin, we live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable, but so did the divine right of kings. And that's all.
And that's as far as I'll go with what I could be saying after this.
But no, I mean, you know, I'm definitely, I'll never tell people to vote. I'll never tell people not to vote. And people might kind of say, all right, well, you know, we've got this councillor who seems really sound. We met them, you know, they've got some good ideas on what we can do around this local issue. Great. You know, that's fine. I've never ever tell people not to exercise their, you know, their right to vote if they want. But I do understand why people feel disillusioned with it. And as I say, I've always been a person who's kind of jumped the fence on either side on that issue. You know, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I haven't actually decided with this one yet. I'll probably decide on Thursday. we'll see.
Well, if you've got, like, I mean, have you got anybody other than the usual suspect standing?
What?
In your ward?
Other than Labour.
Lib Dem, Labour and Conservative?
Yes, we have. Uh-huh.
Another somebody who you would potentially consider?
I'm basically going to have to seek each one out. I mean, obviously, I'm not voting Tory. I'm just not. You know, I don't need to bother with them. I never will. You know, but the others, I'm going to have to actually seek out who they are and look at what their policies are. Because in terms of what I've had through the door, and I've had a few things, they've told me very little about what they would do. So, this is what happened at the local election as well. I ended up, you know, kind of looking them up, you know, trying to find out what their policies were. The most I ever found was, you know, some copied and pasted stuff from their national websites, you know, nothing that was ever, you know, local to the, you know, to each specific area. So that's what I'll be doing. And then I'll make a decision.
Fair play to you. Mm-hmm. I won't. Let's take some comments before we have to, because we're just a bit pushed for time.
Yeah.
So what we've got. Robert Grady is saying, here it's Plaid Cymru, Labour or Green. Haven't seen anything at all from the Greens yet. Mm-hmm. I would vote for Welsh Labour. Drakeford's doing a canny job by the looks of it. And Plaid Cymru might also. Had a meeting with the MP for Plaid actually a few months ago, Ben Lake, really nice bloke, genuine as well. You know, so there are some genuine MPs around. So that may have, like, you know, if I was able to vote in Wales, that may have done it. And like I say, with the Greens, like, I'd rather a Green government than not, but it's not really going to happen apart from in a potential coalition. Who knows? And this is the locals, isn't it? And it's like, I mean, both the Tories and Labour appear to be using it as some kind of like proxy general election in the way that their messaging is coming out.
Yeah, yeah, I've noticed that.
And that leaves us deeply uncomfortable because that's not how any of this works.
No.
Like the way, like just to describe to people, because you see it in comment sections in the local papers a lot where it's just like, Labour have done nothing for, I'm using Newcastle, the North East, as an example.
Yeah, yeah.
Labour have done nothing for us, right? People know generally, if they've tuned in or like whatever, about my feelings about the current iteration of the Labour Party. But to be fair, it's not their fault. The way it works is you get a block grant from the government, the national government. That's then filtered down. There's some arithmetic that decides who gets what. Northern Independence Party put out what they consider to be the North and have said that in that area, public grants for local authorities have dropped by 3.5 billion, whereas in the South East, I believe it is, they've went up 3.4 billion. So I think you wouldn't have to be a mathematician to maybe get your head around what's going on. So when people start slagging off like local Labour councils, mm-hmm. please look and see what happened to that block grant.
Yeah.
Because I virtually guarantee you it's been slashed to bits and they're not really able to run services. I mean, you've seen in Liverpool recently, I think it was five or maybe even six councillors resigned the Labour Party and are now standing as independents because they refused to put like a reduced budget in. They refused to sign that off.
Yeah,
they just were like, I'm just not putting my name to this. Like, this isn't going to like meet the needs of the people of Liverpool. And God bless them for doing that.
Yeah, God bless them.
So, in terms of this, me personally, sorry, I've just hit the wrong one there. Me personally, I'm not voting. I've not changed. You know, I've only always said that I'll only ever participate in this whole sort of ballot box thing if there was something that I could fully believe in. Now, in 2017 and 2019 general election, there was a party who had a manifesto which was costed by Nobel Prize winning economists, and were very careful to do it because they knew what would happen. It made no difference because the worst smear campaign possibly in all of history, certainly in my lifetime, was executed really well. And those millions of people living in poverty can go and burn, according to the people who did it. And that's people on the Labour right. That's people with the Tories. That's like your Lib Dems. That's like a lot of people who would benefit from a progressive alliance. And what the progressive alliance is supposed to be is like Labour, Lib Dems, the Greens. Oh, let's all get together and get the Tories out. Why? For what reason? Like, the only people that a so-called progressive alliance would benefit are people who've already got money. Mm-hmm. Like, in reality, it might be slightly better for a certain amount of people. But if we can't have everybody's basic needs being met, everybody's, nobody left behind at all, then I'm not interested in your system. Mm-hmm. Or if there's not a, like scope within that system through the ballot box for that to actually change, where it's so rational that everybody should be looked after. If you look at like cost of living, house prices, all of these things, a sticking plaster does not cover an open sore. Simple as that. Does not happen. So I will not participate in your stupid fucking system until you fix your fucking system. Otherwise, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to get rid of your fucking system because people are starving.
Yeah.
That's all I've got to say about like this absolute charade. Because that's all this is. It's a charade. But anyway, by all means, do go and vote. Don't listen to me. What I do shouldn't influence what you do. We're having conversations here. This isn't like me stating this is what should happen.
No, absolutely.
If you go and vote, I ain't judging you. Like, please do. But please, similarly, don't start calling me like I'm bolstering the friggin' Tories by choosing not to participate in what I consider to be a charade.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to, I could rationally illustrate why it is one.
Yeah. But
you.
I think whatever we do, we have to make sure that, you know, whether we do exercise the right to vote or whether we decide not to participate, that we're not relying on that no matter what our own personal decisions are, we're all still kind of working within our communities to, you know, to try and help the people around us. And I think a lot of us are doing that, and it's about striving to do that as being the most important thing rather than, you know, begging for, you know, some small mercies from people who might not even have the power to change anything.
Indeed. Yeah. I fully agree with you. Really interested to hear what people are thinking about this. So please do get in touch if you're listening to this after the fact, as most especially as well, and let us know where you're at and what you're doing. Possibly we'll do some kind of like follow-up show after the election and something of that nature. Listen, I know we've got another section, which is Roe versus Wade, but we're very, very pushed for time. How are you feeling about that? You happy to carry on, do a quick 10-15 minutes?
I think this is one that needs mentioned. I know it's happening in the States and people, you know, might not think it's necessarily relevant, but I think it's always good to kind of keep an eye on what's happening in the rest of the world, definitely.
Let's do it then. Right, I'll just set the scene. So, Roe versus Wade, US Supreme Court may overturn abortion rights, leak suggests. Millions of women across the US could soon lose their legal right to abortion, according to a leaked Supreme Court document. The document published by Politico suggests that the country's top court is poised to overturn the 1973 decision that legalized abortion nationwide. That's in the US, of course. If the court strikes down the Roe versus Wade ruling, individual states would be allowed to ban abortion if they wish. It is expected abortion could then be banned in almost half of US states. Roe versus Wade is in the court's sights because Mississippi is asking for it to be overturned. The justices heard that case in December. 13 states have already passed so-called trigger laws that will automatically ban if Roe is overruled this summer. A number of others would be likely to pass laws quickly. Some 36 million women could then lose abortion access, according to research from Planned Parenthood, a healthcare organization which provides abortions. Alice, thoughts on this?
A bit terrifying. It's not known if it's definite whether this is going to happen yet. A lot of people in America voted for Biden, you know, and for the Democrats because they thought Trump was going to do this very thing. Is it, you know, it was going to be the Trump administration that overturned Roe and Wade back in 2019. There was a few kind of quite worrying bills passed. One that was dubbed the heartbeat bill in Alabama, which was going to restrict, you know, when women could have an abortion, which was meant to be like after 6 weeks when most people don't even know that they're pregnant at the time. And actually, it's not easy to get access, you know, to healthcare in America at the best of times. Like at the minute, it's absolutely dire. Again, we could do an entire show about that, you know, how it's, you know, which goes into the, you know, the child marriage laws. You know, it's in some states, you know, you can marry an 11-year-old if you just get her pregnant first, you know.
And are they in the South by any chance?
One of them was Florida. I think that because I was reading an interview from an activist who that happened to when she was 11 years old, how she was forced to marry her rapist. And you know that there's other states where things like this happen, and you know there it's this whole thing of, you know, oh well, if at 6 weeks, you know, that is a, you know, this is a baby, you can't, you know, you can't terminate that. It's all about kind of they call it pro-life, but actually it's what this is going to do if it was to happen, it's going to cause a lot of deaths, you know, and this isn't. Yeah. You know, this isn't deaths from, you know, I think it's always made up that somebody who's going to get a termination is immoral in some way. It's because of living a particular lifestyle. No, it's like this would stop somebody who might need a termination because they're dying. you know, they have, and we've seen this happen, you know, that it might be a pregnancy that was very, very wanted, but they need to have cancer treatment. And you know, this happened to a woman some time ago. I can't remember in what state it was, but she was basically denied that, and both, you know, as a result, both her and the child died anyway, when her life could have been saved by having the termination to get the treatment that she needed. There's also been like really lots of like nefarious bills, like the like laws around what do they refer to it as, something like heart murder or something like that. Now, this is like from women who've had miscarriages or, you know, stillbirths, and through absolutely no fault of their own, but it's kind of been insinuated that they might have had some, that they might have done it deliberately, you know, that they might have killed this child. I think there was a young woman back in 2007 who was charged with that particular crime because there was a byproduct of cocaine found in her system at the time of the stillbirth, not actual cocaine, but a byproduct of it. So then she was then charged with this particular crime. It is already dire in America if this, you know, if this does go through, and there's a chance that it will because the Supreme Court currently has a 6-3 conservative majority within it. So that's, I think it's, this has all come from like a leaked document, I think, but it goes into a lot of detail, so people are assuming it to be genuine rather than some.
Well, that, actually, just on that, like the Supreme Court confirmed that the leak is from a valid document about an hour ago, an hour or so ago.
Right. Oh, right. Okay. Right. So it's there could be like wider implications of it as well, you know, like it could, about potential, you know, people who've experienced a miscarriage being investigated, right up to whether this affects stem cell research as well. It's not about preserving life at all. As I say, it will lead to more deaths is what it's going to do. It's definitely about controlling bodies, you know.
Well, what I read earlier was like before Roe versus Wade, there was this roughly the same amount of abortions, but certainly not the same amount of access to legal abortions. So there was this whole sort of black market of if that's indeed the right term, to where women would go.
Yeah, exactly. And that is exactly what will happen. And funny enough, Ed, on this very live stream not that long ago, we talked about Emma Goldman, you know, the kick-ass anarchist and activist who was actually jailed for distributing leaflets about birth control. Because she, you know, and she did that because she was a midwife and a nurse kind of in very poor districts and saw a young woman die on her table as a result of a backstreet abortion. That's why she wanted women to have access to birth control. And she mentored a woman called Margaret Sander, who was the founder of Planned Parenthood.
Right. So this
at the minute, and it's almost like we're going full circle to the point where, you know, are we going to see people going to jail for, you know, providing people with healthcare or, you know, providing them with literature? You know, there are some, you know, there's some politicians in America who view contraception as, you know, kind of, you know, something that we should be getting rid of because that is part of the, you know, pro-life. This has got nothing to do with terminations or anything like that. But saying that, you know, we shouldn't have access to birth control because that's interfering with God's will or whatever it is that, you know, what they think it is. But it's only to do with women's bodies. And we know this because fertility clinics in America destroy embryos all the time. And nobody says shit about it. In fact, when there was a guy, an Alabama state senator called Clyde Chambliss, when the whole heartbeat bill in 2019 was going through, he was asked about this. And his response was, the egg in the lab does not apply. It is not in a woman. She is not pregnant. And it's almost like he really accidentally told on himself there about what this entire thing is about. And it's true. He was just daft enough to say it out loud. And that's what we're looking at. We've already, you know, this has already been a terrible state of affairs for people in the United States for years and years. Everybody thought it was Trump who was going to do it. Trump employed somebody called Scott Lloyd as the director of refugee resettlement. He had never worked with that client group in his life. He knew nothing about refugees. He was some kind of evangelical Christian, and Scott Lloyd publicly admitted to personally tracking the menstrual cycles of all unaccompanied female minors.
What?
And he made it so that he had to be asked permission personally if one of them wanted a termination, which is something he never ever granted once when it was asked for it. And a 17-year-old rape victim had to go to a higher court to try and get that decision overturned.
Was this Saudi Arabia? Like, they've got to have some kind of male mentor or something.
Yeah. So people are, you know, people in America are frightened, and you know, I don't blame them, and I think
don't blame them at all, mate.
We need to be looking at it very closely. But as I say, it won't stop people from having them. It will stop people from having them safely, and things are already bad. And they, you know, what we're looking at is it's potentially going to get worse.
Indeed. And I mean, the one of the things I want to pick up on, just obviously for time, I want to keep it short. The religious element of it. I thought it's a lot of this is people don't realize how powerful the Christian right is in America. It's huge. It can be a kingmaker in regards to elections. I mean, you look at Donald Trump previous to him, like standing and everything of that nature, he wasn't a particularly like overtly Christian person. he started positioning himself for election, and he was very much going around all of these churches and whatnot. There's an interesting sort of crossover, though. These Christian right groups tend to have a large crossover with Israel in terms of like their support for Israel and lobbying for Israel. And I remember seeing a video some years ago. There was kind of like a horn, which is something that I don't know the name of it, so apologies for that. But they were blowing it, and it's got something to do with Israel or the Jewish faith.
Yes,
a Christian right convention. And but I read a tweet, like a series of tweets by a Jewish woman in America. And what she said was that within the Jewish faith, women or anybody supposed to have access to like sort of the correct medical procedures. Mm-hmm. In the Jewish faith, it's considered to be a medical procedure, and they should be getting access to it. So it'll be interesting to see what impact that has within that kind of Christian right crossover with Israel type of movement, and whether it actually is seen as something that is like anti-Semitic. Now, if we've seen over these past few years, like the definition of that has been rather liberal. Liberally applied, shall we say, the definition of anti-Semitism. So it'll be like, without saying much, but without saying a lot, but you get what I'm saying. I'm absolutely just really looking forward to seeing what happens. To be honest, there's like a little side part of this, and it potentially could stop it, because Politico's document that they got was a leaked one. It's not meant to be for public eyes.
No, absolutely.
Sometimes huge upsurges like this of public outcry can lead to things being stopped. So let's see. June and July are key time periods for this in the States. That's when it would need to be like passed, and I think possibly codified into law. One of the things that didn't happen during the Obama era was it was never codified into law, and I believe he may have even said he would do it.
Yeah,
and his response when questioned on it was, it's not at the top of my priorities.
Yeah.
Now, people who don't know what that means is, to be codified into law would be mean it would be a monolith, unchangeable, it's always going to happen. It was just part of, I believe, the 12th Amendment off the top of my head, but was never codified fully into law. It was just, it's part of law. But it's not codified in it. And I don't understand the vagaries of American law, but that's the basic understanding.
Yeah, the level of access people can get can vary from state to state. But, like, you know, I think you've made a good point about the, you know, kind of the Christian right in America, and it's, you know, and the influence that they have. And it's to the point where they can even propose bills that aren't even physically possible. And they will still find some support. In Ohio, they were trying to pass a bill where in the case of an ectopic pregnancy, that's where you've got a fertilized egg growing in the fallopian tube. You know, it often kills people. That, you know, if it needs to be caught early enough, is to remove the egg from the fallopian tube. What they were proposing is that the fertilized egg would be removed from the fallopian tube and then implanted into the uterus. That is not possible to do. That's not a medical procedure that is currently able. And yet it was being proposed. It, you know, obviously it would never have got through because you can't physically do it, but that's the kind of level we're looking at here. And that's, you know, that's what people are up against when they're fighting this stuff over in the States. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, we want to do like a little sort of explainer about it today. I think it's definitely something as we go towards June, July, we'll keep our eyes on and follow the story up, because obviously it's massively important. And I mean, over half the states of the United States are looking to implement this at the earliest available opportunity for them. Now, that's millions and millions of women who can't get access to abortions. Well, they would obviously have to go to other states. It's kind of like in how it used to be with Ireland, where women would come over to the UK to get abortions, which is just... But, like, I mean, how can you even get your head around that? But anyway, very conscious of time. We will follow this story up. And also, as well, thanks for all the work you've put into this episode. Like, some really good stuff on every section. So thanks for that. Yeah, so let's see. What's going on with my bloody stuff here? Here it is. A couple of comments. There's one from earlier. Julia Hammond-Tailford says, Some links for groups like the Safe Gigs for Women that Alice mentioned earlier would be great if possible, please. We'll get the links, we'll post them, and like different iterations of this content, it'll be in the description as well. So thanks, Julia. We'll make sure that happens.
I'll send them over and we'll get them on the page. That's great.
Cool. Janine Harrison says, I heard if this passes, some states will remove contraception and LGBTQ community will have rights removed.
Yeah. And that goes back obviously contraception and stuff, you know, it goes back to what some of the local politicians view as being a termination, and some of them would view a condom as being that as well.
Indeed. Joanne is saying, weren't they saying it was going to be a federal offence and women couldn't cross state lines to have,
I've seen this, that this was, so basically making it illegal for somebody to travel out of state. And I think there was a thing a while back where they were kind of encouraging people to be, to basically grass people up if you thought somebody was going to be doing that very thing, was going to be traveling, which is hideous.
Just to end the show, it was something, a comment from the top of the show, and that's from Ross Thompson. And he says, play Children of the Night. Now, I'm going to tell the story of this, but just to, like, so it's a bit of a palate cleanser on the way out. I'm going to tell you something that you maybe don't even know. First of all, right, it was last season, we voted or got, there was a vote, a competition for Gated FC. What's going to be the walkout tune? And there was loads of them where it was all this like, oh, it's going to be Seven Nation Army and all this. And people were like, yeah, cool. So I said to my pal in our Gateshead WhatsApp group, hello, Ross, how are you doing? They were talking, him and somebody else were talking about what it could be and whatever, and mentioning certain things. And somebody went, Children of the Night, that'll be mint. That's like the national anthem of Gateshead.
Yeah.
And I believe Lee, who used to be in the Old Milk the Cow group, Lee was the first person I saw call it the national anthem of Gateshead, and I thought it was hilarious. I went to my pal, I went, yeah, watch this. So we basically started a campaign to game the vote, and loads of people voted for Children of the Night, and Children of the Night won. So what that meant was, for the entirety of last season, Gateshead walked out to the Children of the Night. And for people who don't know what that is, it's like sort of kind of some happy, clappy dance tune. We are the children of the night, fight for the future of our nation. That whole season, brilliant. Yeah.
It's great. I drove people nuts with that when I went on holiday recently. I had it like blasting on in the kitchen when I was cooking, with people were going like, Alice has got a really eclectic taste in music, hasn't she? And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, this song is the one that can unite us all. It's, you know, it unites the ravers, the goths, the anarchists.
Everybody. The national anthem of Gateshead.
Children of the Night. And by the end of it, they did say, yeah, it is a banger, isn't it? Like, two rallies.
Dan Gillam says, I voted for Children of the Night. Feed up. So these are when votes count. Yes. This is when we don't need to change the system. We just need to change the walkout music. Yes. We'll have to do it again, actually, because they've reverted back to some like really crappy stuff. But like, we won the league, so it's probably not a good time to like say it, because people will be like, oh, we only won it because Children of the Night was got rid of. It'll be that kind of talk. Anyway, up Gateshead, up the Heed. Thank you, Alice, for being here. Thank you, everybody, for your participation in the comments and for watching and listening and all that good stuff. Much love. Thank you. I'm just going to do that thing where I pull up the thing and do the thing. You know what I mean? It's the closing titles, everybody. Goodbye.